Welcome to Access Injustice. This podcast is hosted by CommuniCourt. In this series, we're focusing on hidden disabilities which can affect a person's communication. In this episode, one of our intermediaries, Demi Holden, talks to Susanna Thompson, independent speech therapist and trustee of the national charity SMIRA, Selected Mutism Information and Research Association.
Welcome everyone to the Selective Mutism podcast, and today we're talking about selective mutism and in the hope to release this at the Selective Mutism Awareness Month. My name's Demi Holden and I'm an intermediary for CommuniCourt, and today we have an expert with us called Susanna Thompson. So welcome Susanna, thanks for joining the podcast.
Well, thanks Demi, thanks for inviting me.
So first of all, can you tell me a little bit about your role and your background?
Okay, so I'm a speech therapist working in Bristol. I used to work for the NHS, but now I'm independent. And I work with, well, part of what I do is I work with children and adults with selective mutism.
And for those who might not be familiar with selective mutism and Selective Mutism Information and Research Association, can you tell me a bit about what they do?
So I'm a trustee of SMIRA, which is the National Charity for Selective Mutism. We're a tiny charity, okay, but we, I think, punch a bit above what other charities might. We've got a website with loads and loads of information on it, but what we're most known for is our Facebook groups. Our main Facebook group, I think, has 21,400 members, we looked at this morning, and we've got members from, I think it's almost 200 countries. So it's absolutely massive. And we also have Facebook groups for teens and adults, for teachers. We've got a multilingual one. We've got one for professionals. And we're currently conducting our own research into selective mutism and autism.
Yeah, it's quite wide reaching. I'm a member of that group on Facebook myself. So it's quite interesting to follow and look at the information that's shared between members, which it seems to be quite a useful tool for people.
Yeah, and you'll get, you know, reading people's stories, it's amazing what they go through.
So what is your role currently within SMIRA?
So I'm a trustee, which basically means I'm on the committee. There's only 12 of us, and we're made up of parents and professionals. And we also have some professionals who are associates. So if we need some particular expertise, we can call on them and ask them questions. But we do bits and pieces in the Facebook groups, we work in the background, and we have an administrator who people email in questions, and so she sort of sends them out to us to answer.
So can you tell us a little bit about what selective mutism is?
Okay, so it's an anxiety disorder, and it usually starts around about age 3 when a child first starts at nursery, and it's bizarrely easy to diagnose. It's can they talk freely when they're comfortable, and so that's usually at home, and can they not talk freely in other situations when they're not so comfortable, and you can diagnose it after a month.
Okay.
Yeah, so you don't need to wait and see. There's two main presentations. There's high profile selective mutism, and that's where somebody's not talking at all in some situations.
Yeah.
And there's low profile selective mutism, which is where someone can give the bare minimum, but they're not going to initiate speech, and then you're not going to have a full conversation with them. And they're much harder to spot. And certainly in school, they're the kids that are no bother at all, no trouble at all, but actually they're hiding, and they're the ones that tend to end up with school-based anxiety and trauma and not being able to attend school. And someone can present with both high and low profile. It depends on the circumstances that they're in at the time. And what most people don't know is it carries on into adulthood if it's not been worked on when they're a child.
So that merely leads on to the next question. So how much do we understand about the condition currently?
So in general, people don't understand much at all. And the biggest thing seems to be the term selective mutism.
Yeah.
Selective is used as a medical term, so it basically means it's not pervasive. So it's something that doesn't happen throughout the whole of their life.
Yeah.
So they can chat freely in some circumstances and not in others. So that's why it's selective situations where you can't talk freely. There's a bit of a move to move it to situational mutism. Okay. But, you know, as far as the diagnostic manuals are concerned, they've only just moved to selective from elective.
Okay.
So selective is a little bit better. Yeah. Most people don't know about the low profile presentation. And, you know, we get lots of professionals, you know, sort of in the groups, in the Facebook groups, we get people saying, well, the paediatrician said that he spoke a little bit, so he can't have SM. Okay. So we get people who work in CAMS, you know, the child and adolescent mental health services, paediatricians, health visitors, GPs, who don't understand that low profile is still selective mutism. And someone with low profile selective mutism experiences as much anxiety as someone with high profile. But high profile is more of a freeze response from the nervous system, and low profile is maybe a bit more the fawn response. So they're at similar levels in terms of your nervous system response, but, you know, the fawn response is where you become compliant out of anxiety. And the other thing that people don't understand is you can be autistic and have SM. They're separate things.
And who would you say it mainly affects? Is there any particular age groups?
Well, it starts at around about 3.
Yeah.
And it carries on into adulthood if it's not been, so if you've not been treated younger. It affects about 1 in 140 children.
Okay.
It's about double that for people who have more than one language. So it's about 1 in 70. And we don't have numbers for adults.
Are there any myths or any stigma related to selective mutism?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So selective mutism, people think it's a choice. It's not. They're not refusing to speak. They're not being stubborn. They're not going to grow out of it. And it's not just shyness. Those are the big ones. You know, they're not being rude.
And as an intermediary, we can work with people with selective mutism. How would you say this condition affects people's communication skills?
Massively. Okay, so it's not just about speaking. You've got this nervous system freeze response that can affect the whole body. So the biggest thing, you know, is initiating communication is really, really difficult. People, sometimes they can't write, they can't type, they can't write a text or send a text.
Yeah.
They're kind of two different things. They might have trouble with pointing. They might have trouble with nodding or shaking their head in reply. Being on camera is a big issue. Being recorded. So even if you said, oh, go away and record this, either audio or visual, they might not be able to do it.
Yeah.
But it really depends on the individual, how comfortable they are, and the preparation that you've been able to do with them and the small steps that you've been able to work through with them.
So in what other ways can selective mutism affect people?
So you get other sort of co-occurring mental health conditions. So we get, if you're talking about an adult with selective mutism, you can almost guarantee that you've got social anxiety in the mix as well now, and quite often a general anxiety disorder. Autism goes hand in hand with anxiety. Selective mutism is an expression of anxiety. So quite often we have people who are autistic with SM. It can affect people being able to use the toilet away from home or eat in front of people away from home. It can affect people being able to leave the house, live independently, shopping for food, getting an education. So school, college, university, getting and keeping a job is quite difficult if you can't talk. Making friends and having relationships, getting help when needed, making decisions and choices. And you get a lot of, I don't know, or okay, which isn't real. So certainly from the, you know, people with low profile selective mutism, if they can get anything out, it's quite often a don't know or an okay, in that sort of, oh, I'll agree to anything. I'll say yes, just shut up and go away and leave me alone.
Are there any other useful tips for working with individuals experiencing selective mutism?
It helps if you've got the luxury of a lot of time. You need to move at their pace in small steps. It'd be best if an intermediary had some selective mutism training and supervision to support them. It's a highly specialist area to work in. Reassure the person with selective mutism that you're not going to try and make them talk, but you're going to try and make them comfortable enough to communicate. And that doesn't have to be through speech. And also letting them communicate through their parents, if you're able to, you know, may well be a really good way to do it.
How would you need to adapt these techniques for people with additional mental health conditions?
Okay, so if you've got someone with social anxiety or generalized anxiety disorder, you're going to need more time. If it's somebody who's autistic, then you need to take into account their rigid thought patterns. You're going to need to take their sensory processing needs into account. So make environmental adjustments for light, for noise, for the need for movement, maybe having fidgets, things like that. So once they're regulated, they're going to be more able to work with you.
Can you think of strategies which would further support individuals with selective mutism going through the court system?
I think building of a trusting relationship with the intermediary is really, really important. And for the intermediary themselves, if they're of the mind or things in report say that the person won't do this, won't do that, won't do the other, if you can switch that to can't yet,
yeah,
it's going to change your mindset as an intermediary. It'll make you feel more relaxed, more kindly towards the young person,
yeah,
and it will change your interactions. So it's yeah, really, really helpful. It's bizarre, but can't is better than won't in your head. I work on a rating scale that's sort of based on comfort, stretch and panic. So somebody yeah, working out where what you're asking them to do is on that scale. And, you know, if it comes up in the panic area, then it's like, okay, so if we adjust it and we do this and this and this, do you think you could manage it now? Does that yeah, bring it down into the stretch zone? And very much be aware of masking. It's not just autistic people who mask. So you're going to have to be really aware of body language. You know, if their face is frozen and their body movements are really rigid and they can't turn their head, you know, they turn their whole body when they're looking, then they are really, really frozen.
Are there any go-to resources you would recommend for people to look at when working with individuals who are experiencing selective mutism?
Right. Number one, I'd say, is join the SMIRA groups on Facebook. Read about what other people are experiencing. Yeah, you'll get a really broad outline of what's going on for people. The Selective Mutism Resource Manual will give you a really good grounding in selective mutism. I think you can get it on from the very large bookshop that's online. Yeah. It's about £40, but it's got another 200 pages that you download. But it is more geared around younger people. In general, there are very, very few people working with adults with selective mutism in the country. I run training periodically, and I could also run training sessions for intermediary services. If anybody's interested, that's absolutely fine to get in touch and we can sort that out. And what we'll do is we'll put a link for the waiting list for my general training in the podcast information.
Are there any resources which you would recommend individuals who are experiencing selective mutism themselves that they could be pointed to?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked this question. I'd say join the SMIRA group.
Yeah. You know,
there's over 21,000 members and you will find some things that chime with you. Read through people's posts, right? What I'll do as well is I'll put a link to a where to get help file on the SMIRA website and in the groups, but I'll put a link to that in the podcast info. It's mostly for younger children. I've got a list of therapists that I've trained on my website. It's on my homepage that you can download, have a look, you know, yeah, and see. And you can also go to helpwithtalking.com, which is the all the independent speech therapists in the country. Well, most of them have listings there. You can tick the selective mutism box and extend the search area to like 500 miles because it works really well online. So SM okay, therapy works bizarrely well online, but you would need to read everybody's bio and get in touch to find out if they work with teens or adults.
Yeah.
It's very different from working with younger children with SM.
Is there anything that you'd like to add before we finish off the podcast today?
No, it's just thank you so much for asking me. It's, you know, it's I'm always up for getting the word about SM out further.
Yeah, and this is just a brief segment and hopefully it can help some other people out there. And obviously, like you say, if people can look at Smira UK. The website's very detailed. There's loads of resources on there. The NHS have just recently updated their page and there's a lot more information now.
So it's the NHS Choices page.
Yeah, and there's a lot more information there and resources that people can look at. But I appreciate you taking your time out today to do the podcast, and hopefully this will go out at Selective Mutism Awareness Month and people will start to learn more about the condition, and hopefully it will be less unknown in the future.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much to Susanna Thompson and to Demi. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more episodes of the Accessing Justice podcast on Spotify or Podbean. You can also visit the Community Court website for more information on this condition and many others in our Access Brief. Visit www.communitycourt.co.uk.